Greetings to you. My name is Keith McLaughlin, and I'm grateful for this opportunity to share with you an overview of my experience as an ordained minister and how my views and opinions changed in the moment I encountered the contemplative life. Having offered myself for full-time ministry way back in 1985, with the possible reason being there's got to be something more to this spiritual journey I had begun. And so at the young age of 26, married with two daughters at the time, I have three daughters now, I began a journey which I believed was God's calling on my life. And little did I know what I would be thrown into. What is generally known as giving your heart to the Lord became my experience at the age of 20. Having no church or spiritual upbringing, I surrendered my life to Christ while sitting in my VW Beetle on the 23rd of November 1978 at Midmar Dam, just outside Pietermaritzburg. And in offering myself for the ordained ministry, over the years, I have more than once wanted to call it a day due to the frustrations working within me and what I'd come to see as an institution with rules, expectations, and obligations that began to unsettle my inner being. Deep within, I had this constant gnawing feeling that somehow what I was doing was not church as I understood it. And my theological training and ongoing theological discussions around issues seemed to be more focused on submitting to the dogma and decisions of the church tradition I was a part of than the inward journey of one's spiritual development. And yet, as much as I felt like a square peg in a round hole, I remained doing what I believed was the Lord's calling. Over the past 36 years, I've pastored 8 churches, and every time we moved into a new church environment, I seemed to start from square one, taking the congregants to a level of growth where I would then find myself stagnating with frustration, knowing that I cannot give them any more, and at the same time, knowing that I should. I would then accept an invitation to move on, and guess what? Start all over again, taking all my old notes and teachings, updating them and presenting them to this new congregation. And in between all this moving between different churches, I attended conferences, retreats, seminars relating to church growth and spiritual development, how to grow your church and how to develop your own and the congregation's spirituality, whether it would be through the teaching of the gifts of the Spirit, the 40 Days of Purpose campaign, Alpha, 10 Steps to Be a Better Pastor, and how to get your congregation to become better participants in church life, and so I can go on. Reflecting on all this, on all these activities, I noticed one significant trend. For a season, there was some change, but sooner or later, the church would slip back to the same old, same old. I would then question myself, my calling, my abilities, and why things were not working or progressing in the way I believed they should. Now, I want to clarify myself here. I do not view the things I've just said as being wrong or unnecessary. They were a part of my journey within my church denomination, bringing me to the place where I am today. Therefore, I am grateful for those experiences and will never judge them as being superfluous. In the moment, they all seemed right, and my decision to participate in them was part of my quest to improve and grow my ministry and seek ways to grow the church and the people I pastored. During this quest for something more, I came across Psalm 42, verse 7, deep calls to deep. When I reflected on this passage, it so resonated with me that I needed to dig deeper within myself and ask, what is this deep that is calling out to deep? Around this time, I read a book by Gene Edwards entitled Living by the Highest Life. It was a book that made a significant impact on my spiritual journey at the time, to the extent that I wanted to pack up the ordained ministry there and then, as I began to realize that there was indeed something more than this merry-go-round of just doing church week after week after week. I was kind of coming to a conclusion that what I was doing and until retirement was it. And yet I would often say to Linda, my wife, that it cannot be like this, and that I could not retire as this ordained minister, believing that what I was doing was all there was to my spiritual journey. I was first introduced to the word contemplative by a person who would become my mentor over many years. It was during one of my sessions with him that he loaned me a book entitled Experiencing the Depths of Jesus Christ by Jean Guillon. In reading her book three times, it had a profound impact on my spirituality, and I began to realize that the something more that I'd been sensing for years was actually within my grasp. And two sentences in her book became an incentive to search within myself as to whether I could fully grasp the something more. She writes, "Learn to continuously sink into nothingness." And then I read the following: "To live the Christian life is easier than taking a breath of air to breathe." In these two statements, I began to realize that my search, or at least my quest, seemed to be coming nearer and nearer to what the psalmist was crying out, "Deep calls to deep." What seemed to put a seal on all this was when I looked deeper into the encounter that Jesus had with Martha in regard to Mary's behavior. I read from Luke chapter 10, verse 41 to 42, Jesus speaking, "My dear Martha, you are upset over all these details. You are worried and bothered about so many things. There is really only one thing worth being concerned about. Mary has discovered it. She has chosen the good part, which shall not be taken away from her." There I saw it. One thing. One thing? Discovered it? Chosen the good part? I find myself overwhelmed by these statements. As I read the scripture, I needed to ask myself, am I correct in assuming that there's but only one thing in life to be concerned about? What did Mary discover? Well, firstly, again, I had to ask myself, what was Mary not doing? She wasn't talking. She wasn't praying. She wasn't reading the Bible. She wasn't bothered or worried or anxious. Neither was she serving. What was she doing? Now, Jean Guillon helped me to consider an answer to this question. She writes, "The main element of the soul is the will. And the soul must will, in other words, be intentional, to become neutral and passive, waiting entirely upon God. Can you not see that this condition of utter passivity, the state of doing nothing and waiting upon God, is actually the highest activity of the will?" And my response to this was, what? What is this? I had to go back for a moment and listen to what Jesus said to Martha. "My dear Martha, you are so upset over all these details. You are worried and bothered about so many things." I had to ask myself, why did Jesus say this? Well, listen to Martha speaking to Jesus. "Lord, doesn't it seem unfair to you that my sister just sits there, the implication, and does nothing, while I do all the work? Tell her to come and help me." Just sits. As I read earlier, Jean Guillon writes, "Learn what it means to continually sink into nothingness." Nothingness? What's this? Looking at that encounter, I had to ask, what was Mary's discovery? What is this one thing that Jesus mentions? For the most part, I believe that the majority of us Christians really do fall into the lifestyle that Martha portrays. I did. Martha seemed to be at many places at one time, which in turn led to worry, accusation, and the fragmentation of the mind. She was of too many minds. In that moment, I considered my life. What's going on inside my brain? Where was my focus honestly? How many things am I really worried and bothered about at the same time? To what extent was my mind fragmented? I realized that there is one thing we all have in common, busyness. And that busyness leads to all sorts of issues pertaining to our characters. For example, we get so busy about our judgmental and cynical attitude towards others and ourselves that at times we actually become lost in that mindset. We then wonder why we can't relate to others or even ourselves. And all this seems to stem from this one thing we lack, or should I say, this one thing we don't pursue. By contrast, I saw Mary was at one place at one time. She was of one mind. She was actively present in the moment, present in the presence of Jesus. All of Mary was there. No thoughts anywhere else, being present in the now, in the moment. I was really taken in by Cynthia Bourgeau's comment on this particular occasion. She writes, Mary and Jesus together make a perfect picture of how spiritual awareness attends to divine awareness. By doing nothing, we feel we are not achieving much. And that is exactly what Martha was presuming with Mary. Just sitting and doing nothing. Lord, I'm doing all the work. She just sits there. Tell her to come and help me. I've realized that the downside of our Christianity is that we seem to have this idea that we must always feel like we have to be doing something in order to gain some kind of spiritual progress to maturity or approval from God and being acknowledged by others, or at least begin to feel that we are actually doing the Lord's will, like read my Bible and pray every day, go to church, evangelize the lost, serve the poor and the outcast. And so we busy ourselves in all these areas, believing that we are accomplishing the Lord's purpose by doing his work. But I had to ask myself the question, are we? If Jesus is saying that there's actually only one thing to concern ourselves about, have we discovered it as Mary had? And is it our starting point? It's within our mind and emotions that we have to feel that we are doing something for the Lord. And yet, the focus of our relationship with the Lord cannot be based entirely on our mind or our intellect. Now, this might sound a bit controversial, but I'm finding that we cannot communicate with God in our intellect or reason, in our emotions or feelings, or in our body. Why? Because God is spirit. How do you define a spirit? A spirit has no definition, no form, no body, is of no substance, doesn't eat or drink, is neither male nor female. So how do you communicate with the spirit? How do you communicate with God who is spirit? I'm not talking about tongues here. That's an entirely different concept. In order to be truly present and to have this awareness of presence, as Eckhart Tolle puts it, I need to intentionally enter into that place of nothingness except God. Learning to renew the mind from within and teaching the mind how to deal with, or should I say, work with the myriad of distractions, thoughts, people, work, church, praying, serving, allowing myself to be present in the presence of God. Stop all and just be. Learn to move from human doing to human being. I recall when Elijah ran away from Jezebel and was hiding. The Lord passed him by, not in the strong wind that was destroying the mountain. He wasn't in the earthquake or the fire, but there was a sound of a low whisper. And the translation puts 1 Kings 19 verse 12 this way, a sound of sheer silence. It's not about seeking God in the loud things, the big things, the fancy things. It's finding God in the whisper. In fact, it's learning to find or discover God in the silence. As John of the Cross writes, God's first language is silence. It is in the nothingness that God speaks. If we haven't allowed, or perhaps more correctly, taught our mind to sink into nothingness, into silence, then are we truly hearing God? Or are we hearing our own thoughts, which we presume to be God's word? Meister Eckhart writes, "Nothing in all creation is so like God as stillness." It could very well be these distractions that we allow to affect our mind and thoughts, even the distractions of doing good things or ministry or serving or praying, which in themselves can become the clutter and noise distorting God's voice, God's presence. Serving has its place. So does praying, but it must never replace sitting at the feet of Jesus. Yes, just sitting there, as alluded to by Martha. In all my years of ministry, this was the one thing I failed to practice, because it feels like we are doing nothing, wasting our time, because we have so much to do. Jean Guion again writes, "Your self-nature becomes so pleasantly attached to its own efforts that it simply cannot believe that anything is going on within your spirit. Unless the mind is able to feel and understand, it refuses to believe the spirit is having experience." Now, for many of us, we have created this sense of need to feel God at work in and through us by feeling that we are doing something for Him. We have overtrained ourselves to feel with our emotions, but have neglected the realm of our spirits. For example, it is learned behavior when we worry, are prejudiced, are self-opinionated, etc. This is what we construct and begin to believe that this is who we are, the small self, which is in contrast to the true self. As Cynthia Bourgeau puts it, "I think, therefore I am." And when we don't have that feeling of God in us, we say He's not working in us and only seems to be blessing others, or "I'm not doing enough," or "I'm not good enough." Most times, if not all the time, when God is at work within us, we don't feel Him, for the reason that He works in our spirits by faith and not in our mind or intellect or emotions, where we tend to respond with reason. Jesus, in entering the pool of Bethesda, was not distracted by the cries of the multitude that needed healing, but was focused on the one thing His Father had called Him to do: heal one man. Neither was Jesus distracted by the multitudes who were touching Him, but focused on the one thing His Father had called Him to do: respond to the touch of one woman. You see, reason says to us, surely Jesus must heal all. Why doesn't He? Jesus said, "I and the Father are one." His interaction with the Father was within His spirit. That's why He could overlook the multitudes that wanted healing, demanding His attention. He had learned how to engage His Father within. He had learned to quieten all the other voices demanding attention and trying to sway Him away from His Father's purpose. For me, the foundational scripture that brings out the essence of this discovery that I've made on this contemplative journey is Psalm 46 and verse 10. "Be still. Cease striving. Stop fighting. Let go and know that I am God, who is your peace within you, my sanctuary." In other words, to know God, to know His presence, to know His being, is to let go. is to be still, is to cease striving, is to stop fighting and just be. As Meister Eckhart put it, the eye with which you seek God is the eye which God seeks you. St. Francis of Assisi puts it this way, the one you are looking for is the one who is looking. I'm beginning to learn that we sink into this nothingness, the silence, by intentionally disengaging ourselves from all the distractions, by letting go of all the noise and clutter in our heads. Yes, even ministry and serving. Yes, even from reading our Bibles and praying, for they too become distractions, and learning to just sit, be quiet, just be in the Lord's presence. Nothing else, because it is in the silence that God is, so I have discovered. I believe that was Mary's starting point, the feet of Jesus, saying nothing, doing nothing, learning what it means to continually sink into nothingness in the presence of her Lord. He became her sole focus. She allowed herself to be present in the Lord's presence. I would like to believe that from this position, she rose up to serve her Lord in accordance to his purpose and will, and not what she presumed it to be. It is from that nothingness, from the feet of Jesus, that we rise up and read the scriptures, pray, intercede, witness, serve, and so on. How do we reach this place of nothingness, where we can hear the whisper of God in the silence? I need to go back to Jean Guillon. She writes, the main element of the soul is the will, and the soul must will to become neutral and passive, waiting entirely upon God. Can you not see this condition of utter passivity? The state of doing nothing and waiting upon God is actually the highest activity of the will. Waiting upon God is actually the highest activity of the will. And it was from here that my contemplative journey began and has opened up a new dimension of my spiritual journey. That something more has actually turned out to be just that. That one thing worth being concerned about statement made by Jesus to Martha. In my willingness to deconstruct much of what I had constructed in my theology and how to do church, and also willing to take the risk to let go of my set ways of running church and becoming more aware of the moment, has created within me a freedom that I had not known before. Yes, I still have my questions. I still have many questions and frustrations, but I've learned to rather live in the question than the answer, because I always wanted to live in the answer, but only to discover that God is mystery. God is the question. God is the answer, as stated by Basil Pennington. After many years of reading about the contemplative life and making the effort to put it into practice, I happened to stumble upon Solitude Retreat Center through a friend of mine. For the very first time, I was able to physically be part of a contemplative community that not only affirmed the journey I was on, but enabled me to further explore this one thing I believe Jesus was alluding to when he described Mary's position at his feet. What I've shared here is in a nutshell regarding this journey that I've been more intentional about for around 2 or 3 years. The Martha, Mary, and Jesus encounter became the catalyst to rethink why I am doing the things I am doing. And more specifically, why do I keep on doing church the way I've done it for years? And why does everybody else seem to do the same thing over and over again? There has to be something more. Deep calls to deep. My belief is this, that this one thing Jesus speaks of is the contemplative journey which the Western Church has lost and needs to recapture. if there's to be any meaning and purpose for the church's existence in our day.